Okay. Now, let's continue with the second part. It came to me during the night, he says, that this very work does go back to the book Metaphysical Notes, in which the realization was brought forth that there is nothing to demonstrate except that contact with God. You're going to hear that again and again and again until it is beat into you that the only reason for meditation is to make that contact, not to change anything out here at any time, not to demonstrate anything out here at any time. My kingdom is not of this world. You're going to hear this until it becomes your consciousness. Now, the moment we have consciously attuned ourselves to it, we are at one with God, which means that we are at one with all that God is. That is, with all that the creative principle has made its own, in its own image and likeness. So, it's all included, isn't it? Now, that's not the end. If you're just coming to that point, there's another step beyond that. From there, it is one step to this that comprises the unfoldment that is imparting itself to us right now, which is the one point which we do not readily grasp. Now, he's admitting that this is difficult. And I'm telling you, if you thought the first talk was bumpy, or any of the first part, it's going to get really rocky now. Now, it's not an easy one until it comes by inner light. I can tell you that. I've had my own struggles with it. And it was only when the inner light itself came that in about 3 or 4 words the demonstration was made. All right, are you ready? He's going to take away from you something else. Now, heretofore, or before this, we have thought of our spiritual activity, that is when you practice spiritual healing or meditation, whether it was in our studies or our meditations, as the turning of discord into harmony, sickness into health, lack into abundance, loneliness into companionship, homelessness into a home. But from this point on, that's all of you, listen. From this point on, and this point is not to be given to anybody else, this is to be demonstrated by you first. From this time on, when a temptation comes up about health, lack, this and that, you now immediately remember health or sickness, lack or abundance, homelessness or home, loneliness or companionship, what of it? Neither of these pairs of opposites enter into my demonstration. And since Sharon sent me this book some months ago now, I want you to know she ruined me. Because I've been practicing this, and I too can attest to how difficult this is. In other words, we're supposed to use whatever comes to our remembrance to remind ourselves, nope, there's no demonstration to make out here, ever. The only demonstration I have now is that contact, that inner spiritual movement. That's all that I have to demonstrate, nothing else. My kingdom is not of this world. I have one demonstration, the presence, and not for any reason. Now, I guarantee you, you're going to have problems. The minute you decide, I'm going to do this, you're going to be hit with a dozen problems. Some of them might be serious. And you're going to find out how difficult this is when you're staring at a financial difficulty to turn it all off and say, I have no outer demonstration to make. Pooh-pooh. Good finances, bad finances. What of it? I'm going within now, simply to make the contact. Now you try that and see how that works. Or if you have a health issue. Wait and see. But, he says, if you want to go further, if you want to find the... Well, he started out by telling us the infinite way is not a teaching, it's an experience. If you're ready to go beyond the teaching, the learning, to the actual experience, then you're going to have to be willing to walk through this initiation. Because this is an initiation to a higher level. I guarantee it. Here's the secret. Once you can rise above the desire for physical harmony, then you are entering the spiritual kingdom of God. As long as our thought, which has been in metaphysics, and it has been, I'm going to practice this principle and change this appearance, is on exchanging our discords for harmonies, we still have only traveled part of the journey. Now, the journey is really not one of going from physical discord to physical harmony, because that would merely mean a matter of time, or changing a bad dream to a happy dream. I've been saying that for a couple of years now. It is a legitimate thing for our patients and young students to be interested in overcoming the discords of sense and achieving harmony in their so-called human experience. And it's a wonderful step forward when they turn from material means to spiritual means to do it. But that's not the end of the road. It's only part of the way along the road. All we have done is rise above temporary discords into temporary harmonies. We have not yet achieved the realization of the spiritual kingdom. All right? It does not yet appear what the glories of God are. No, as long as we are exchanging physical discord for physical harmony, well, we still have no idea what the kingdom of God is like. All right, now. We're not interested in a heart that beats regularly. We're not interested in a normal amount of finances. We're not interested even in harmonious relationships. This is now true of the small groups to whom I am telling this. It's necessary that we, all 10 of us, when we are presented with the discord from now on, whether in and of ourselves or somebody brings it to us, whether it's physical health or physical sickness, physical wealth or physical poverty, none of these is the end and object of our spiritual search for God. Of course, at first there's going to be many arguments inside of you. Trust me. Trust us. But ultimately, you will see that rising above the physical discords into physical harmonies has no bearing on a spiritual life. Well, now we're taking all of that away. Our spiritual life only begins when we rise above both physical harmony into spiritual realities. Or both physical harmony and physical discord in the spiritual reality. That is why I have said that for us, problems are necessary. It is vital that we have problems, because the temptation to rest in physical health and physical supply would rob us, and that's what it did for me. And I'm telling you that from, well, let's see, 1985 to about 1995, well, that's 10 years, I guess, I coasted. I told you before, everything I ever wanted, I had. But then one day, I felt like I was dying in the middle of it. I had everything. I couldn't do it anymore. I had to come back to the drawing board and find out what I missed. And what I missed was the Christ experience. What I had was metaphysics. What I missed was the mysticism. Now, you're not going to like this either. That's what I said earlier. It is just like meditations in which we attain a sense of peace or harmony or the realization of the presence of Christ. These are most wonderful experiences when they come. But after we have experienced those, we have to rise to the next higher level, in which they are of no significance and no importance whatsoever. Since having realized omnipresence of the Christ, what difference does it make whether we have an emotional feeling about it or not? Whether we feel then emotionally satisfied or emotionally starved will make no difference, since we will have realized that the activity of the Spirit is the eternal thing. Whether or not there is any sense or feeling or emotion realized. All right, now what he's saying here is that don't be confused. Because you have a feeling of calm inside, because you've said these statements over and over in your mind and hypnotized yourself into a state of calm, and now you come out of that meditation emotionally feeling good, don't confuse that with the Christ experience. And perhaps that's what some of us have been doing for years. But he says, it just may be that this experience of the movement of Spirit, or the quickening of Spirit within, may have no emotion with it at all. And I can tell you this, I will tell you this. I don't want you to repeat it. It's only for the purposes of example. There was a person that asked me to meditate with them that had a severe case of, well, something physically very severe. And I agreed. And when we sat down to meditate, I was looking for this, what does he call it, emotional satisfaction. And I didn't experience it. True, I reached a state of stillness in which I felt not much at all, just the stillness itself. There was no overwhelming feeling of peace. There was no, well, overwhelming anything, just a stillness. Just a quiet, a nothingness. And a few days after the meditation, the person wrote to me and said that it had completely disappeared, and that's a year and a half now, and it hasn't returned. And so what I'm saying to you is the same thing that Joel said. If you remember, if you ever read his autobiography, he said that after visiting that man, what was his name? Brown Landstone or something like that. I don't remember. Anyway, after visiting him with a severe cold, he had a meditation with him, and I remember it was his day off, Saturday, and the man didn't want to see him, but Joel persisted, so he said, okay, come on in. They had a meditation together. Within 72 hours after that, his cold completely disappeared, and some man came up to him and said, Joel, would you pray for me? I feel like if you pray for me, I don't know what your religion is, but I feel like if you pray for me, I have this terrible headache, I think I'll get some help. And Joel said, well, okay. And if you recall, he closed his eyes and said, Father, I don't know how to pray. I'm not sure what I should do. And the man tugged on his sleeve and said, great, Joel, that's fine, it's disappeared, thank you, and walked away. And then a day or two later, something else, and then something else. Joel had this ability from then on to go within, make that contact, and people received healings. But Joel didn't understand it. He didn't understand what was happening. Why is this happening? How is this happening? He'd never seen it before. It wasn't at all like Christian Science, where you apply certain principles. No, this was something different. And it took him years to discover what it is. He says that in the Art of Spiritual Healing. For years after I have discovered this, I didn't know how I could do it, how I could explain it. but then he received the scripture, a stone is cut out of the mountain without hands, and he meditated on that until it brought forth what he was doing. Then he could explain it, he could teach classes, out of that could come the book, The Art of Spiritual Healing, Realization of Oneness, and so on and so forth. Alright, so the point I'm making is, do you think that the Spirit of God, Christ, is dependent on you having a happy feeling after your meditation? Do you think it's dependent on anything you know with the mind? Do you think it's dependent on anything you can see, hear, taste, touch, or smell, or think? No. No. It's dependent on you dying in your meditation. And then it functions, with or without an emotional feeling. You see, even that has to go. We have to come up higher than that. This is the point that will be, says Joel, above everything, the most difficult. And that is the realization of physical health or physical sickness. What does it matter? Because in that realization will come the spiritual health. In other words, by really, really, really understanding my kingdom is not of this world, not physical health or physical disease, you will come to see, to perceive, to experience what spiritual health is. By really coming to see, I mean truly coming to see, my kingdom is not of this world, not physical supply or physical lack, not material supply or material lack. You will come to see in the silence. You will know what spiritual supply is. And that's the only way. By coming to see that a physical companion or lack of physical companion, what does it matter? Really, truly feeling that. My kingdom is not of this world. You will come to perceive the infinite eternal companion or comforter. And that's the only way. And so the struggle is worth it, isn't it? Because through this struggle, on the other side of this struggle, you will have the conscious realization of God and all that is included, which is spiritual companion, spiritual supply, spiritual life and health and body and mind. You will find that this is the essence of the chapter, The New Horizon in the Infinite Way. Now this is worth saying, even though you've already read it. This was never written. It was not even written as the other writings are. It came to an entirely different way. It came to me through a dream, word for word as it appears in the chapter, The New Horizon. It came through in a dream, written in gold letters, in old English lettering, on a red silk banner that was suspended from my ceiling to my bed. And I awakened out of the sleep to find that banner was still there. And I took pencil and paper from my night table and copied down that message word for word. And then afterwards, this banner, I saw it fold itself up and disappear. And it has never reappeared. And that is the chapter, The New Horizon. And now, what he doesn't say there, but what's said elsewhere, was that he woke up in the middle of the night, he saw this chapter written on that banner suspended above his bed. He wrote it down word for word, and at the end of it, when he wrote the last word, he just sat there sobbing, just sobbing, at the beauty of it. And Emma came and put her arms around him. Now, that gives us a different feeling when we open it and read The New Horizon. The sense which presents pictures of discord and inharmony, disease and death, is the universal mesmerism which produces the entire dream of human existence. You said you want to awaken. You must rise above both the good and the bad. It's all a dream. If you would awaken to the reality, to the kingdom in which you dwell now, you must be willing to rise above both. And he says, or rather, it says on the banner, it must be understood by you and I that there is no more reality to harmonious human existence than to discordant world conditions. It must be realized that the entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion, and we must rise above the desire for even good human conditions. Understand fully that suggestion, belief, or hypnotism is the substance or fabric of the whole mortal universe, and that human conditions of both good and evil are dream pictures, having no reality or permanence. Be willing, you, now, hearing my voice, be willing that even the harmonious conditions, as well as the inharmonious conditions of mortal existence, disappear from your experience in order that reality may be known and enjoyed and lived. So you see, by giving up the pairs of opposites, completely dying in each meditation, you come into the experience of reality. And it tells us a little bit about it, what we will experience when we do this. It says, above this sense life, which is showing you these opposites, there is a universe of spirit governed by love, peopled with children of God, living in the household or temple of truth. This world is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. In it there is no awareness of discords or even temporary material good. This is the glimpse of reality, the soul realm. Alright, go back and study that chapter again. He says you should study it for a couple of years, and I have been taking his suggestion and doing just that. Now, that's the way this chapter came, and you will find that it reveals all of human experience. That means the good human experience, as well as the bad human experience, is an illusion. I've been saying this for 2 years, haven't I? Who has believed me? Not many. It's a dream. But it doesn't mean that this world is a dream. Now listen, circle this, underline this, highlight this. Meditate on this many, many times. Right here, meditate on this. It doesn't mean this world is a dream. It means that this world, as we see it, is a dream. And from the moment that our interest in physical harmony disappears, then we will begin to behold the real universe, the universe as it is. So, he says elsewhere, it's a deceptive state of thought. No illusion is externalized. I've been saying this for years. It's a deceptive state of thought. And what is the thought? The thought is an interest in physical or material harmony of any kind, or a fear of disharmony of any kind. You see, the opposites is the deceptive state of thought. When that goes, when you embrace wholeheartedly, my kingdom is no longer of this world forever, I'm not going back, then you will begin to behold the universe, well, the kingdom in which you're standing. When we awaken, we shall see him as he is, and we will be pleased with this likeness. We will be pleased with what we behold, only though when we awaken. Now, the awakening comes only when you can realize that health is the opposite end of ill health. Wealth is the opposite end of poverty. Somewhere in the spiritual realm, there must be a consciousness, an awareness of no health and no lack of health. Just as eventually you come to see in relationship to God that God is no power. Now, it's not bad enough he's taking away this entire set of concepts which have formed themselves as a series of universal beliefs into a world and a person and many persons. Now he's going to take something else away from you. Your belief that God is the only power or omnipotence. So I told you this was going to be bumpy. Alright, here we go. At first, in our experience, God is a great power which overcomes lesser powers. God is the great spirit that overcomes error, overcomes sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. Correct? Yes, in metaphysics we're applying these principles and we're watching the problems disappear. God is the power. Well, he utters his voice and the earth melts. God is the power that dissolves the illusion, right? Wrong. That was true then. Now we are being asked to come up higher. Then comes the second unfoldment in the realization of God, in which God is the only power, and it does not overcome any other powers, since there are no other powers to be overcome. In other words, then comes the second realization. Oh, yes, omnipotence. The all power. If God is all power, there can't be a second power. But now that's going to be taken from you. That is the realization in which there is no truth over error. No God over devil. No spirit over matter, and no reality over unreality. Since the reality, being the infinite all, these other things exist only as illusion or illusory beliefs, and not as entities or identities or powers. And that is when you come into the realization of God as infinite all, the one being, the one power, the one law. Ah, but then you go on to the still higher realization of God, in which you learn that God is no power. And I've hinted at that in the talk, the non-power of silence. Why is God no power? A power must always be a power unto something. A power must always exert itself in, through, over. But God is no such thing. God is a state of divine being. Now see if you can get your mind around that. You can't. You must come up over the mind to have the experience of that. God is the infinity of divine being. God is not a power, because there is nothing for God to be a power to. God does not even create. Oh, there's another one. There's another one. Now, how conditioned are you and I to believe the first chapter of Genesis? God created the heavens and the earth. And yet I've been suspicious of this for a while, and I was glad to see it corroborated here. God is an infinity of being appearing as If God created, there would have to be a time of creation, even a place of creation. And then you'd have God confined to time and space, and you'd have God and a creation. God is not confined to time and space, and therefore God is not confined to energy or power. God is. God is being. Now, I had this experience of God as is, and I put it in the talk, is. Now, God is being. God is, and that's all that God is. God is not life, not truth, not love. God is not health, not wealth, harmony, wholeness. God is not all things that God is supposed to be. He's taking every concept you've ever had, even the new ones, away from you. Because if you don't lose these concepts, you won't have the experience. Now, I love you guys, and I talk to myself the same way. Buddy, if you don't lose these concepts, you ain't going to have the experience. God is, and that's what God is. God is. Anything else sets up a sense of separation for time and space. Because why? Because time and space is a concept. How can you have before Abraham was I am? It doesn't say before Abraham was I was. Time is an illusion. Space is an illusion. Omnipresence doesn't mean that God is everywhere out there. You're looking at omnipresence wrong. Omnipresence means all of it's right here, and here, and here, and here. And every when is right here, and right now. Now, to understand God as no power, but just as being, is normally and naturally to see that there could be no such thing as health or ill health. Because then God would be being something. And God isn't something. God can't be confined to something. God is no thing. And that is literally true. God is no thing. God is nothing. God is no thing. I just made that talk, didn't I? I forget the name of it now, but it had no thingness in its title, and I was experiencing this realization down there in Myrtle Beach when I made that talk. The no thingness. Alright, now, God is being, and God is being what? God is being God, and that's all that God is ever being, is God, and then God is only the being which we would call infinity, or immortality, or eternality, and so there are no opposites. There is no such thing as life and death. Okay, there's another one. Here, you thought you were alive, didn't you? You're not. You're not alive, but you're not dead. Your being, eternal being. It can't be alive or dead. It has to be eternal being. Whoa. Contemplate that. Now, there is no such thing as health and sickness. There is no such thing as abundance and lack. There is only the infinity of God being God. So, as the temptations come to us, and they do, and they will, especially now armed with this, not only our own experience in some degree, rarely in any major degree, but in the experience of our patients and students in tremendous degree, or relatives, there is where our major temptations come in, that we are made to believe that there are conditions natural to others or present in others, not present in ourselves. There is our temptation to wander away from the one self, which is all there is, the one self. Now, do you see? He'll probably say this, but I'm going to say it. Do you see why there's only one demonstration to make? And that's the everywhere allness of self. That is the conscious awareness of the activity of that self. Because if you've made that demonstration or had that inner awareness or experience, then there's only one self. So any self looking to the self is going to experience the self realizes. But the temptation is to believe, oh, that poor person with cancer. Oh, that poor person having to do without. They're going to shut their lights off. Oh, that poor person, they're so lonely, they just lost someone. The temptation is to believe that, well, there's a person suffering. Over here, I have a relationship with God, there's a person suffering. How can that be when there's only one self? You can't be any better off than they are. They can't be any worse off than you are. If you're seeing that, you're seeing something that's not there. You're seeing the opposites. You see why Joel said over and over that the entire material creation is nothing more than a belief in good and evil? He had begun, and I believe completely overcame that belief, which is the deceptive state of thought conditioning you into not seeing the reality in which you live and move and have your being, and that being in you, as you. Now, it's like looking right down a beam of light to be able to say, health, sickness, wealth, lack, loneliness, companionship, home, no home. And you're looking straight down the beam of light and witnessing heaven, harmony, wholeness, completeness. You see? You're seeing through the opposites to the is. The only way that I can describe it is to remind you that you can't feel the blood coursing through your body. You don't even at this moment know that there's any blood coursing through your body. You're not aware of it. It's just functioning. It's taking place, but you have no awareness of it. And so, you can't say it's healthy or unhealthy, normal or abnormal. To you, it's non-existent. You have no knowledge of it. And so it is with health. All right. Now, he gave us a clue there, if you were listening. The way that you feel about the blood rushing through your body, which is nothing, you feel nothing about it. Tell me the truth. Unless you just had an attack of high blood pressure, you didn't even think, you haven't thought about the blood rushing through your body since you were in science. That's the same attitude, the same exact attitude you're going to have to get about these beliefs in good and evil, health and ill health, wealth and lack, companionship and loneliness, young and old, male and female, right and wrong. You're going to have an absolute non-existent, no knowledge of it. When you're that empty of a knowledge of good and evil, what have you done? My God, what have you just done? You've just reversed the whole process of accepting the tree of knowledge of good and evil, haven't you? You have overcome the world. Like Christ, you have overcome the world, which was only a deceptive state of thought. A belief in good and evil. You see now how deep this is? How you must rise into this new consciousness, which we talked about last week? It's a consciousness of not seeing the illusion. It's the consciousness of experiencing the activity of Christ, the activity of truth, and dwelling in that, and it dwelling in you, and there being only one where you appear. Only one where you are, and that one, I, this new consciousness, the activity of truth. You must become the truth. You remember, beyond words and thoughts? The ascension is always the same, rising above thoughts about truth to becoming the truth. Read it again. The unveiled, or truth unveiled, beyond words and thoughts. I think I'll read it again. All right. In the spiritual sense of health, which you won't know unless you overcome these opposites, you have no sense of health at all. You don't even have a sense of body. The body just functions, and you have no knowledge of it whatsoever. That is why you will hear people in the 60s and 70s, when someone speaks of age, you'll notice a smile on their face, because they don't know what you're talking about. They don't feel it. Now, the reason that the body separates itself from that sense and begins to show signs of age is because of the accepted belief in good and evil, that I and my body are two separate things, whereas I and my body are one. Not the body of the senses are showing you. That's made up of the belief in good and evil. There's another body. This is a deceptive state of thought. You will never see your infinite, eternal Christ body until you let go of, overcome, rise above this belief body. But he told us, when you overcome the belief in good health and bad health, you'll begin to see spiritual health. So when you overcome the belief in good body or bad body, you'll begin to see a spiritual body. Remember, we just read it in the New Horizon. There's a universe peopled with the children of God, a spiritual universe in which you have a spiritual body, and it's right here and now. You're in it, but you don't have the awareness of it until this other has come up over. And it starts in each meditation. That's why we're learning to do this in meditation, and eventually with our eyes open. Now, as we in the message of the infinite way come to this realization, the word becomes flesh. God appears as, not in or through, but as. Then we learn that this body is incorruptible as the spirit of which it is formed. Then it is that the body does not age or have aging processes any more than we have. And we never have. Alright, so what he's saying there, you can't understand if you're honest. Don't tell me you understand this, because you don't. But have hope, because if you will do this, which we have outlined this week, in your meditations, coming only within several times a day, not for anything out here. My kingdom is not of this world. Ever again, I'm leaving. When you come to that, really, you've wrestled with it enough to say, I don't care, I'm leaving all those loved ones behind, boo-hoo. You've wrestled with all that. You've realized this is something that has to be done. Then you are ready to ascend up into the kingdom of heaven here and now. In the end, you'll find out you haven't left anyone. It's all included. Only now you see the children of God, formed by spirit, instead of these concepts. When you reach this place, where you're willing to let go of the material belief in good body and bad body, then you'll experience a new body, an actual brand new body, as new as God. Only it's formed of spirit or spiritual consciousness, not formed by the belief in good and evil. You'll see it. You'll feel it. You'll learn to walk in it. Honestly, you will. That's the body you can take through walls and on water. Don't tell me that's a someday deal 1,000 years down the line. That's a lie. You can do it now. It begins in these meditations. All right. That's the body that you take with you when you leave here. You can ascend and take it with you. But this will not come while we are seeking health or supply or anything on the human plane. This will come only when we have given up the search for things and conditions of any kind and resolved our life's work into the realization of the activity of Christ within. All right, so this is what you must do. You must wrestle with this as Jacob wrestled with the angel or Michael, whoever it was, until he refused to let it go until it blessed him. You must wrestle with this and refuse to let this go until you receive the blessing. And it's uncomfortable. Take a look around at everything you love and realize it's a dream. Does that make you comfortable? I don't think so. Take a look at your body in the mirror and realize you've never seen your body. This is an image created by World Mind. Does that make you comfortable? Take a look up in your mind, these thoughts that are coming most of the time during the day, especially when you haven't meditated in a few hours. Realize that the World Mind is dancing in your mind. Those aren't your thoughts. Your thoughts are not my thoughts, saith the Lord. You're one with that presence. Are these your thoughts? Who's renting space in your mind? Does that make you comfortable? I don't think so. Realize that your concept of God as omnipotence is wrong. Does that make you comfortable? Realize that your concept of God as someone you could turn to dissolve these problems out here is a lie. Does that make you comfortable? No. This is a bumpy road. You remember in the beginning I said to you, well, that sounds like something I want to sign up for, and we all laughed about it. Here we are in the middle of it. But there's no other way. It's straight and narrow, and few there be that enter. Yet if we are those few, we can form that band of Christhood around this planet. You and I can do it now. Everyone's waiting, and many in the New Age movements are waiting for everything from the second coming of Christ to compassionate aliens to come and save the planet. How about if you and I do something for real about it? How about if we attain this consciousness? And all it is in our meditations. I'm not talking about overall becoming the Christ. That'll happen. It just happens. I'm talking about the first steps in your meditations, realizing that this mental activity is not an activity of Christ. You must go beyond that and have an activity of truth. The truth. I am the truth. Have an activity of that I, that Christ, that I Christ within you. Feel it. Then you too will become a part of this band of Christhood around this planet. It may be enough to save this planet. Can 10 righteous ones save the planet? Save the city, which is symbolic for consciousness? Maybe. Maybe we can. Why not? My oneness with God constitutes my oneness with all spiritual being and idea. Why not? So, your life's work from this moment forward must be the realization of the activity of Christ within. When we no longer search for harmony, for peace, for safety, for security, for joy, or for anything that the world knows. My peace give I unto you, not as the world giveth. The moment you and I stop seeking for physical health, physical harmony, physical well-being, then we open the gates of consciousness to the realization, the experience, the perception, the awareness, to admit that spiritual light which becomes the spiritual life of our being and our body. Our new being, our new body, our new earth, our new Jerusalem, our new heaven. That comes solely with the activity of realization of the Christ, but for no purpose on earth. Remember this. The nations of the world are seeking spiritual power in order to have harmonious human experience. Yes. Don't forget, the nations of the world are seeking God right now so that they can have more earthly things, better earthly things, so they can catch larger fish in their nets, bigger fish, better fish. But that the basis of our work, yours and mine now, from this point on, is to leave your nets. Now, all these things we've been talking about for almost 2 hours are our nets that we have to leave behind. You see now when Christ said, leave your nets and follow me. Did you think that was an experience that happened 2,000 years ago? Christ is saying that to you this second, and it's the Christ within you, I within you, saying, leave your nets and follow me. Will you do it? Will you? The basis of our work is leave this search for more and better human good and open consciousness to the spiritual realities. All right, all right, all right, says Joel. Now, again, listen to the rest of this. Now that you have a taste for this, listen to the rest of this, or another part of this. In the New Horizon, the first glimpse of reality of the soul realm, this experience at first is like watching the world, the entire world, disappear over a horizon and drop down from before us. There is no attachment to this world, no desire to hold on to any of it, probably because to a great extent the experience does not come until a great measure of our desire for the things of this world has been overcome. You see, you cannot have the experience until your desire for anything of this world has been overcome or let go of. At first, when we begin to have this experience, we cannot speak of it. This will happen to you. I'm telling you ahead of time. There is a sense of, touch me not, for I am not yet ascended. I am still between the two worlds. If you've been listening, if you've been following along in this Kalua study series, you are in fact between two worlds. Do not touch me or make me speak of it, because it may drag me back. Please, let me be free to rise. Then, when I am completely free of the mesmerism and its pictures, I will tell you many things which eyes have not seen nor ears heard. A universal illusion binds you to earth, to temporary conditions. Realize this, understand this, because only through this understanding can you begin to lessen its hold upon you. The more fascinated we are with conditions of human good, and the greater our desire for even the good things of the flesh, or the greater our desire to get rid of the evil things of the flesh, the more intense is the illusion. In proportion as our thought dwells on God, and this means throughout the day as well as your meditation, on the things of spirit, the greater the freedom from limitation we are gaining. Why? Because in God all things are included. Think neither on the discords nor on the harmonies of this world. That's it. You're done with this world. If you haven't realized it before, you know it now. The first glimpse into the heaven of here and now is the beginning of the ascension for you. This ascension is understood now as rising above the conditions and experiences of this world, which is that deceptive state of thought. And we behold the many mansions prepared for us in spiritual consciousness in the awareness of reality. And finally, no good thing is withheld from you as you look above the physical evidence to the great invisible. Look up, look up. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. I, Christ, within you am breaking the sense of limitation for you as an evidence of my presence and of my influence in your experience. I, the I of you, am in the midst of you, revealing the harmony and infinity of your spiritual existence. I, the I of you, never a personal sense of I, never a person, but the I within you, the I of you, am ever with you. Look up.